So welcome. I'm Cheryl Hunter again. Welcome. Thank you for being here. This is a workshop and keynote I like to call Resilience 2.0. Here's why. There's a commonly held myth about resilience that it's getting back up after you've been knocked down, and furthermore, doing that with some velocity, ideally. Right? That's kind of how we look at resilience. But I think there's a different level that we can take when looking at resilience, which is, what if we were more pliable? What if we were able to bend and not break? What if we didn't get knocked down so darn easily? And that's what I want to work with you on today in this talk and workshop that we're going to do. I've identified what I call the two C's of resilience. They are connect and charge. Connect and charge. And here's what I mean by that. Connect is connect with people. Build connections that matter. Have relationships that make a difference, that are deep and profound and make some kind of difference for you. So there's connect. The next one is charge. Charge your batteries. Now, the two of these combined enable you to be buoyant and not brittle. But charge your batteries. Have you ever experienced that you kind of are going around on, say, half batteries? Or better yet, totally empty? Deb earlier was talking about if you're a caregiver or a caretaker or a parent or you manage people or any of this, sometimes you even, we tend to go around like at a deficit, not even at zero. So charge your batteries is something else. So connect and charge. I'm going to get more into these a little more deeply in a moment, but I want to tell you how I came to realize that these two things cause resilience, foster resilience, enhance resilience, and what we can do about it. So, as a kid, I grew up on a horse ranch in Colorado. I'm from a little mountain town that was so remote that you couldn't see signs of civilization. Aside from our house and our barn, you could look out in the distance in every direction and there was nothing but meadows and mountains and nothing. It was just the great wild west, you know. It was, as a little kid, the most magical place in the world. But when I got to be a teenager, it was like, oh my God, get me out of here. I just want to go someplace where someplace they wear cool clothes. So, anything other than bootcut Wranglers, frankly. And someplace where there were people I wasn't related to by blood. So I thought, okay, what could I do that would enable me to get out of Rye, Colorado? I don't know what skills I have other than milking goats. I'm not quite sure what I know how to do. I couldn't figure it out. So I took a career day, a me day. I played hooky, and I was in high school. And I hopped on my mini bike, rode the hour and a quarter round trip to the nearest town that had a convenience store, picked up some career advice, Glamour magazine. And I opened it up, and I go, oh, I could be a model. I mean, I was already on the boys' basketball team. I was tall enough. And I read an article. It was not just pictures of people who were models, but there was some article about that it was, you know, a job. And I thought, nobody's going to argue that I have to leave Rye, Colorado to do that. I mean, there's, you know, nothing to do. There's no modeling here. So I just had to get someplace where they needed models. I thought, well, I'm going to Europe. That's so cosmopolitan. It's the opposite of everything we know. So I saved up my money, talked to my best friend, talked her into going on a little vacation to Europe. And we scrimped and saved and bought Eurail passes and packed our suitcases absurdly full of way too much stuff. And finally, there we are. The big day arrives, and we go to the airport. No sooner did we get to France than a man with a camera around his neck came up. He approached me. He asked me if I was a model. Told me he could make me one if I just went off with him and his friend over there. That's how friggin' easy it is to become a model in France. My friend said, oh, no, those guys give me the creeps. You're not doing anything with them. But, you know, I hadn't actually let her in on my big secret plan to escape right Colorado forever, and she wanted to go home afterwards, so I did the only thing I could do and ditched her. I went off with the guy with a camera around his neck and his friend. You probably figured out now they weren't actually photographers. They were criminals. They drugged me. They took me to an abandoned construction site, and they beat the daylights out of me. I had no idea a head made noise when it was kicked. They beat me more. They raped me. You can fill in the gory details with your own mind. But I never dealt with anything like this, and I didn't know what to do. At one point, there was this shimmering little flicker of light that was on the wall. It was totally dark in there. And I was staring at it, transfixed by this thing. I thought, you know, whatever's making that shimmering spark of light is free. And I stared at it with all my might, thinking if I stared at it hard enough, I could somehow merge into that thing. I wasn't this scrap heap of a girl lying on a cement floor with a demon on top of her. I was just a shimmering spark of light that could fly away at any time I chose. 3 days later, they dumped me in a park in Nice. I didn't tell anyone. I couldn't. I was... I couldn't. If I had to recount it to anyone, going through it once almost killed me. I couldn't do it again. Plus, if I told anyone what had happened, they would know that I was dirty and filthy and rotten and used up and an idiot, so gullible for going with these men in the first place. So I decided the only way I could live was to just never talk about it. I became that spark, that shimmer of light. It was just very deep down inside of me. I kind of shut off and stepped away from people and became aloof, a loner. I found the only thing that really charged me was reading books. I became fascinated with reading. I never really was into it before, but I read everything from the complete works of William Shakespeare to the complete works of Stephen King. Just anything that would give me a vacation from my mind. I decided to become a model anyway because no one asked you to talk. And even though I was with people all the time, I was just a shell. I wasn't a person to them. I was just a living mannequin. And never in all the time I was a model did anyone ever ask me to have a deep conversation or for my thoughts on anything. I realized I'd found my home. It's kind of a weird phenomenon in the fashion business where the grass is always greener someplace else. So I got to London, and they said, oh, we need you to go to Paris. I got to Paris, and they sent me to New York. When I got to New York, they said, Japan. Japan's the place for you. It was in Japan that the next stage of my journey unfolded. When I wasn't actually shooting something, I'd hang out in the agency, spend all my time there. There were no models there. That was key for me. I would just hang out in the conference room. It was me and the grandparents of my agent, Oba and Oji. The thing I liked best about them, they never talked either. They spoke perfect English, but they just sat silently and painted, drank tea, or red. I had found my tribe, Oba and OG. I would sit in the conference room whenever I wasn't working, and one day I was sitting there. There was this massive table in the conference room that was kind of odd to me. It was narrow at one end, as the tree must have been, and wide at the other end, as if they just took down a massive tree and planed it and placed it there. But what was interesting to me was they left the eyes of the wood in, and there were all these dents and scrapes and divots. Now, they'd sanded it, so it wasn't rough, and it was polished up a bit, but it was beautiful, but it was kind of odd at the same time. One day I was half reading, half silently plotting my revenge against the men in France when the grandmother, Oba, walked in and saw me absentmindedly tracing my fingers over one of the big dents in the wood, and she said, "Aha, wabi-sabi." I looked up out of my super, "Wasabi, like, is it time for lunch?" And the grandfather chuckled and said, no, wabi-sabi. They took times explaining what wabi-sabi means. The grandfather said that wabi-sabi is the most important of all Japanese principles. Wabi-sabi, they told me, says that the beauty of any object lies in the flaws of the object. So something can only be seen to be beautiful to the exact same degree that it holds damages, flaws, ruined parts. They actually design those in to make it beautiful. They were blowing my mind. I'd never seen anything wabi-sabi at Walmart. I gathered everything, made my excuses, and got out onto the street, started walking as fast as I could. I couldn't wrap my head around, could it apply to people? Could it apply to me? No, that's impossible, I decided. I just kept walking as fast and as far as I could. Finally, I realized I hadn't eaten all day. I was starving. And so I stopped at the closest fast food place, like a Japanese version of McDonald's. Ordered my fries and Coke and went and sat down at a little table outside. I was sitting there. I tried to pick up my book, but I couldn't. I was too overcome with the thought of something being perfect because it's imperfect. The flaws make it good. I couldn't wrap my head around it. But before long, I was distracted because there was a woman sitting a couple tables away from me, probably homeless, had a lot of bags, and she was rustling stuff and mumbling stuff, and I swear she was looking at me and giving me the stink eye. I go, "What does she want?" She starts to shout, "Naze, senso nihon." I'm like, "What? Is she, what?" I swear she's actually looking at me. Now I am kind of picking up my book, pretending to do something else because people are starting to look. A man at the table sitting next to me leans in and said, "She asks why you make war on Japan." Why I make war on Japan? Who does she think I am? Crazy woman. I go back to eating my French fries. "Naze, senso nihon," she continues. She grabs one of her bags and puts it on the table. Takes out what looks like a cloth envelope and unfolds it. It contains two little photos, black and white, kind of passport photo size, a man and a woman, and she holds them over her head and again starts to shout. Now she's saying even more. The man at the table leans into me again, and I notice as I look to him, everybody's looking at me. Everybody in the place has their eyes on me, which is making me so uncomfortable. He leans in and says, "She asks why you kill her parents." Kill her parents? What? Who does she think I am? I don't even care that people are looking at me now. And at me, not at the shell of me that gets taken photos of. What are you all looking at? Who does she think I am? I'm not some 60-year-old guy in an army uniform. I was even alive when we were in war with Japan. My parents weren't even alive when we were in war with Japan. Who do you think I am? Now everyone's really looking. I try to look at her and give her the stink eye the same way she was giving it to me, but I make the mistake of catching her glance. And as I do when we lock eyes, I see past the screaming and the tears and the snot and the spit flying and the anger and the frustration. I just see this inability to make sense of any of it. And her overwhelm. And the moment we actually connect, I no longer see a crazy woman. I see me. I stopped what I was doing and said the only two words that made any sense. Wabi-sabi. The woman stopped. She became quiet. And I bowed. I reverently gathered my things and got up. Everyone was still looking at me, so I bowed back. Virtually everybody bowed. I used to pray that wabi-sabi was real. That somehow it could translate to English. What I realized in that moment was, in connecting with the woman at the restaurant, that it's not the pretty, polished up, shiny things in life that connect us. It's all that other stuff. And in that moment of connecting with her and connecting with the whole restaurant, I suddenly realized that this whole notion of wabi-sabi somehow gave me access to connecting beyond just people who don't talk to me. That there was this whole world of connection beyond that. And that day, that little spark of light that I had stuck so deep inside, I saw the possibility of actually charging myself in other ways, including with connecting. Today I know that wabi-sabi is real, beyond the shadow of a doubt. You are magnificent. What makes you magnificent is everything you've previously believed is wrong with you. And that is your access to connection. Thank you. Thank you. So, the two C's of resilience. I want to give away my experience with resilience so you don't have to go through the eye of the needle every time, okay? You don't have to just pick yourself up again. You can train yourself in anticipation of it all hitting the fan to be buoyant, to be big, to be badder than anything that comes your way, okay? So, we're going to start with connect. Yes, we can do these things, connect and charge, once we've fallen down. But the real resilience 2.0 is about being able to do it in anticipation of something going wrong. Being able to do it now while things are the way things are. I can't presume the way they are for you. But we'll start with connection. So in my own story, there was the connection of Oba and Oji, the grandparents, that frankly, I don't know where I would be without them, and the principal of Wabi Sabi. But then there was the unlikely connection there with the woman in the restaurant. But I want you to look, there are relationships, profound connections that we've had over time that make all the difference, whether or not we've recognized them to ourselves or anybody else. But I want to give you a chance to make this present for yourself by just take a moment and bring to mind somebody that's made all the difference for you. Just bring them to mind. Thank you. Now bring somebody else to mind that's also made a difference for you. And what you'll find, given we're talking about resilience, is sometimes the difference wasn't necessarily a positive one, but you emerged positive on the other side. Okay, thank you. Now bring to mind a third person. Thank you. So I want to give you a chance. We've got little worksheets here. It's got my photo on it. Turn to the other side. If you don't have one or you don't have a pen, please raise your hand and we'll get something for you, okay? Do you need a pen? Could we have a pen up here? Do you need pens? Pens as well? We will work it. Thank you. Just one moment. We'll give you a moment. We'll get you some pens, okay? Are there pens we can get? Nadia, are there pens we can get for people? My bad. We have no pens. Please forgive me. Can you share? I'm willing pens. I apologize. Okay. Please share. Okay. So the first exercise on the two C's of resilience is connect. So here's what I want you to, we're not going to write just yet. Thank you for sharing your pens. That's very generous. Thank you. So we're not going to write just yet. I want you to start to speculate for a moment, okay? So with regard to connect, making connections, deep connections, relationships that matter, start to think of who are people with whom you'd like to develop a relationship. Now, it could be somebody you've noticed or admired at work, somebody in a different context. It might be somebody you've been meaning to call for 6 months, but haven't. It could be somebody you loved once, but you've lost touch with them. You're going to Google them, find them on LinkedIn, whatever it is. So take a moment now and write down three people that you're going to connect with, that you're going to create some connection, build some connection with. The bonus exercise is to list six. Now, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to share in small groups. So if you want to write in code, go ahead. Please do that now. Take time and write down at least three names of people you want to build connections with. In a moment, I'm going to pair you. I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself to your group. But before I do, because this could be a cool opportunity to connect, little aside. One of the things I also do is I work with victims of trauma. I do some pro bono work with victims of extreme trauma and help them to the other side. And I find that they're a great role model for us in terms of being resilient. And one of the things that invariably makes the difference is to connect with people when we face challenges. We're tribal beings. And the irony is when we face challenges, we tend to isolate. So building connections of all kinds really matters. So I want to encourage you to use this as this little microcosm of being here at your table as an opportunity right here, right now to build connections. So I want to give you a moment to introduce yourselves, and as a little bonus, you could say some wabi-sabi thing. I'm not saying you to talk about being abducted or anything, but it's like, oh, wow, hey, something. You know, something that reveals something about who you are, what matters to you. There's an opportunity to really connect in that regard. There, it's funny, you know, as I ask you to look at sharing wabi-sabi type things, like the thing, in other words, what I mean by that in the real world is like the things you might normally hide. Like, oh, I'm such an introvert, I don't usually go to these things. I mean, even something like that. Oh, everybody who's an introvert goes, oh, God, me too. You know, there's a way to connect and relate to people. What I mean by doing this in your day-to-day life is looking for opportunities to connect and find connections that matter is not to trauma share. Oh, you think that's bad. Whew, let me tell you about this one. Nothing like that, or I'm not advocating that you become the person at work who shares far too inappropriately, far too much. But rather, you know, you're standing outside waiting for a meeting to happen. Somebody says, how are you? Authentically answering, as opposed to, you know, good, good, yeah, 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 good, you? Okay, shall we? A moment, connect. So I'll give you a moment to do that with your groups now. Please do that now. Okay, may I have your attention? May I have your attention? May I have your attention? One of the requests from the event organizers, which is a great one, is for you to have a conference call with your group between now and, Nadia, is it the end of the month? Yeah, between now and the end of the month, meaning it's an opportunity for you to continue this connection even further. And I recommend also that you pair up like an accountability partner with somebody here, you know, one or two people, depending on how many people are at your table, if it's an odd or even number, and have a call with them individually as well. So I want to give you a moment to orchestrate that, and then we'll come back and do the next exercise, okay? Please do that now. All righty. Okay, please come back to this conversation. We're going to do the next exercise. Please come back to this conversation. Hello. That was pretty awesome connecting, right? Okay, acknowledge each other. Yay. I invite you to deepen the connections you started here today. Okay, so please come back to this conversation so we can do the next exercise, okay? I love it. You guys are taking photos of each other already. I love it. Okay, come on back. I want to give you charge, okay? I want to give you the exercise charge. Charge your batteries. So again, how many of you can see that you go around on empty batteries a lot of the times? You're just not charged up? Okay. Doing, giving, working, do. So this is an exercise that you can do to become more resilient, like it's your job. Like it's your job. And sometimes when I give this exercise to clients, they'll go, well, that's kind of self-centered, isn't it? No, you can't pour from an empty cup. Fill you. It's like the airplane analogy, you know, put your mask on first so you can help others. Take this on like that. So it's in order to do the exercise called charge, we're going to create your proven practices list. Proven practices list. Now, what do I mean by proven practices? They're proven to you. It's not like there are some inherent proven practices out there. But what I want you to look for is, what are the practices that you can do things that you do of any kind that put you in touch with who you are, that fill you up, that return you to a grounded, centered place. And I'll give you some fun examples of things in a minute, but I'd like to just hear, just have you raise your hands and I'll call on you a few things if you're clear what are some of those things, practices that you do that fill your batteries. Yeah. Walking in nature, beautiful, great one. Getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep, thank you. Random trips to the beach. Great. Yes. Talking to random people at coffee houses. Love it. Meditation. Thank you. Writing. Wonderful. Thank you. Journal. Wine and cheese. Anyone? Okay. Yes. Yes. Listening to your children and feeling their joy and enjoying their joy. Let me come over here to you guys. Yes, in the blue. Yoga. Morning coffee and quiet time. Meeting up with a friend one-on-one. Way in the back. Having a date with yourself. Awesome. I don't even need to give you examples. One more. Helping someone. Beautiful. You were going to say volunteering. Beautiful. Okay, so even though I'm calling it your proven practices list, not everything works every time. You may be going through the eye of the needle and find that meditation, you just can't right now. You can't jog, you can't meditate, you're gonna have to come up with something else. Which is why we've got these handy dandy lots of lines down here. I want you to come up with at least six. Do that now. Okay, thank you. My suggestion is that you continue adding to this list. I recommend sometimes with clients that they come up with as many as 25, which may seem like a huge amount, starting with six. But the recommendation is this. This is the part that correlates to resilience, okay? Do at least one every single day. Every single day. Every single day. That way you operate with your batteries full, and when your batteries are full, you're less apt to get knocked down in life. You guys, please stay with me. Please stay with me. I know you've created awesome connections, which is great. But stay with me. There's still more to come. So take on one every single day, again, like it's your job. That will help you weather challenge, change, uncertainty. When you've done whatever those items of self-care are, whatever fills your tanks, whatever fills your batteries, that helps you not be brittle when challenges come, okay? So, all right, on the other side of this card, please turn it over. I want to stay connected with you. Connection, you'll find for a lot of you, is a way to charge. It's definitely one of my ways to charge. So I want to stay connected with you. And at the bottom here, here's how we can connect. On my website, CherylHunter.com, if you go to CherylHunter.com/Mesa, M-E-S-A, there are a couple different things. One, when you enter your name and email address, I'll send you a free copy of my book, How to Get Unstuck, which will deepen the work we started today. And two, Inga, stand up at the back for a moment. This is one of my head coaches at the Hunter Group, phenomenal coach, Inga Estes. And we are going to give two free one-to-one coaching sessions when you enter. We'll choose them randomly and send it out via email so you know, okay? So take your phone out, go to CherylHunter.com/Mesa and do that right now and we'll connect, okay? I'll give you a second to do that right now before handing it back over to Nadia. One moment. Who'd like a number, a moment? Oh, we must be crashing my website. If only I knew some people in tech. Okay. Someone just told me we're crashing my website. I'm not used to that many visitors at once. You could, if you weren't able to get in and do that, just you'll be taking that with you. Opt in, because we really want to give away, like I said, two free one-to-one coaching sessions with one of our awesome Hunter Group coaches. And I would like to give you the book as well and stay connected, most importantly. Thank you for your time and your generosity. It's been a privilege to be with you. Connecting is one of my ways to charge. Handing it back over to you, Nadia. Thank you.